You could hear a pin drop in the lobby. It was that quiet.
The referee letting play continue. One last throw.
It's obviously hard now because of the way that's all ended, but
Scales is up after it. Scales wins ahead.
I'll have that forever.
Yeah! There's the goal! That's Troy Parrott! That is unbelievable!
Inner Drive, Episode 1 with Troy Parrott, out now on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by Allianz, a proud sponsor of Irish sport.
Off the ball. The Racing Pod.
On Off the Ball.
With William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
Welcome to episode 134. Can you believe that? Of the Racing Pod, here and Off the Ball. Remember, we're here every Friday with analysis, race previews, tips, stories, interviews, bit of crack as well. A reminder to folks, the full Off the Ball Racing Pod is free wherever you get your podcasts. And I'm John Duggan. And Johnny Ward is off this week, so delighted to be joined again by Tom Malone of the Irish Field. How are you, Tom?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad, John. Weather's still playing ball. So
your charity bet won as well last week.
We had a winner.
Causeway. Yeah. You're the Giants, yeah. Causeway.
Yeah, yeah. Stepped up in trip. Probably wasn't super impressive in the end, but look, he got it done. He was well backed. I mean, I think he was 5-4 in the Friday and he was a turned odds on. But it was an interesting weekend overall, I thought. Yeah, plenty of signposts, obviously. I think we flagged as well. We thought, you know, Aidan and Ryan could have eight winners, and by the second race on Sunday, it very much looked like that was going to be the case. And then, you know, Minnie Hawk, bizarre kind of a run. She got shuffled back, and then obviously the reversal of form with the 1,000 guineas.
So this was in the Tattersalls Gold Cup. Al McCann won it, a slowly run race. He's a 5-year-old now. Needed the run first amount last year, but not this time. So she flopped. I mean, you know, that, Aidan O'Brien put that down to the pace in the race over 10 furlongs. But she was fit. It was a strange run.
It was a very strange run. She just ended up, they seemed to bust out of the stalls and she got shuffled back, and Ryan just seemed happy enough to drop her in. And then, I don't have the time stats to back this up, but Aidan is adamant they absolutely crawled in through the middle part of the race. And then, you know, Al McCann, in fairness, seemed just kicked off the bend and he wasn't for catching. So, like, even the way he won suggests it wasn't a truly run race, because, you know, you shouldn't really win like that first time out the way everything went. So yeah, I mean, there is a little bit in that, but it was still too bad to be true. You know, she should still have kind of plugged on maybe for third or whatever if she was fit. So I would still say that the pace to the race is a bit of an excuse, but it doesn't seem to be enough of an excuse for how she got beaten.
And Stad was an easy winner of the 2,000 guineas.
Yeah.
The market said everything. I mean, he was 11-4 on.
Yeah. And I suppose the good thing as well is, and I'm kind of thinking about this after the race, we always try and pick holes in the 2,000 guineas, but so often the Newmarket 2,000 guineas is actually the strongest form on offer. And look, that was the case again. We were probably trying to maybe overthink it a little bit. But yeah, he won and he won well. And they seem very bullish that he's come on from Newmarket. I mean, given the Godolphin horse in third, or in second, that was in third in Newmarket, it seems the same form line. So they were very, very happy to go and have a crack at Boecho. And it's all systems go to meet in the St. James's Palace Stakes at Royal Ascot.
Have you been to Royal Ascot?
Not been to Royal Ascot, no. I've been to Ascot itself, but amazing pageantry.
Yeah.
The thing is, I love it as well. I think they made a mistake by you know, over COVID, they added races and made 7 race cards. I love the fact it was just a 6 race card, super compact. You know, they'd already stretched it out to include the Saturday and spread it out a bit thin. So, look, they've gone the Cheltenham route and they've watered it down a little bit, but it's still fantastic.
Yeah, Precise won the 1,000 guineas at the Curragh. So she was a fabulous 2-year-old. She needed the run, obviously, last time out. True Love had a run when winning at Newmarket, but then the tables were turned because Precise obviously needed the run first time out.
Yeah, I was looking to speak to Aidan after Great Barrier Reef won the 2-year-old race, and I just asked him, you know, and he was very forgiving of what Precise did at Newmarket. Said she was drawn on the wrong side, probably was a little unfit, took a bit of a blow, and basically said Ryan minded her in the closing stages. So what visually looked like she was just staying on, he said she was just basically led canter home a little bit at Newmarket with an eye to the next day. And then he suggested it was a difficult decision for Ryan to pick between Love and Precise. And yeah, I mean, once again, Wayne Lorden has had a very easy double. Winner of the 1,000 guineas in Ireland and England. Because one of the things about True Love is that in Newmarket, as you said, you could pick her. You could pick her out as a winner from 3 furlongs out. She was cantering all over everything. Whereas maybe on Sunday she got caught in a little bit of a pocket, but still she didn't have any real excuse. And just
no, I think Precise yeah,
absolutely came over the top, annihilated her.
Like, yeah, took off like a rocket.
Yeah, like at one stage I was like, geez, looks like Wayne Lorden's nearly going to fall off here. The horse is almost running out from underneath him. You know, she was going that well. And yeah, so just fascinating as well. You know, she's an, you know, Star Spangled Banner. He's a 20-year-old sire who's had a decent career, but certainly not an outstanding stallion career thus far. Obviously was a brilliant sprinter in Australia and in Ireland and the UK. Like I said, he's been a very, very, very solid stallion, but he's never had anything like this where you go and sire two classic winners in a weekend. And then as well as that, Precise really does kind of look like an Oaks filly, doesn't she? Like, she hit the line so strong, you couldn't not say she's worth a go at stepping up to 1.5 miles or 10 furlongs at least. Yeah, it's fascinating because, again, she's by Star Spangled Banner. She's out of a Galileo mare, which obviously would give her that bit of, would give her that class of stamina. But, you know, so many people look to the sire first. And, it's something that put us off a bit last week, that sort of pedigree. Maybe she hadn't trained on or whatever, but now she looked exceptional on Sunday. And every 2-year-old that won over the weekend as well, I think, is heading for Royal Ascot as well.
Right. And Epsom is obviously before that next weekend. Have you been to Epsom?
No, not been to, actually, yeah, I've been once, but just went to the infield on a kind of a very much a jolly on a day out. So right. Yeah, it's good old crack.
Just a bit of news from Thursday, Limerick. Philip Burns, the jockey, banned for 21 days. And a winner that his father had that he rode, Charles Burns, was thrown out Marion Avenue because Philip, his riding resulted in a opponent being badly hampered, and another horse was carried out as well. So Cassid was awarded the race to Danny Mullins' horse. And the stewards said in their report, I quote here, having considered his clean record under Rule 214, the race day steward suspended Philip Burns for 21 race days and ordered he forfeit his riding fee. The stewards were satisfied Burns failed to correct his mount at a point in the race that was in close proximity to the hurdle and as such rode in a way which was far below that of a competent and careful rider, and where it would be obvious to such a competent and careful rider that riding in that way was likely to endanger the safety of another horse or rider. The head-on would back up the decision of the stewards to ban Philip Burns for 21 days. Let's look at this French Derby then on Sunday, Tom. This is a Chantilly 3/2 Prix de Jockey Club, Group 1, 1 mile, 2.5 furlongs, 16 horses. And not in 11 years has a horse in double figures in terms of the draw won. So Constitution River's been drawn 15. Does that mean his chance is gone?
I don't know. I just feel like punters are just obsessed with horses at Constitution in the name. Like, what? Like, this horse was on last Saturday night into Sunday morning. He was punted into 2-1 favourite for the Derby at Epsom, for which he was never going to run. And the first question after the first race, Aidan O'Brien was like, oh, has the horse's chances changed? And he's like, what? No. Like, no, this is not the case. And then there was a, you know, the horse drifted back out and obviously he's gone and now he's heading for France, as is always the case. So he's just won those horses because he's probably put in the most surprising trial run, in that he really kind of jumped off the page, and I think all the stopwatch nerds are really excited by it as well. You know, yeah. And in fairness, there is this kind of chat in horse racing where, you know, a few people who are obsessed with stopwatches have a very high profile, and, you know, getting a big time form rating is a massive thing. The horse has obviously improved significantly from his 2-year-old career, but yeah, to win from 15 in a Prix de Jockey Club is very, very difficult. It's also only
I found odds for it eventually. You can get 15-8 on Constitution.
I think it's a terrible price.
Right,
I'd lay him all day at 15-8, 15-8, 7-4, and first
he's
actually
13-8 in places.
An Irish horse in France, first and foremost. So
but they won it last year.
Yeah, not too often. I think what they've won it. Okay, they've gone there twice in the last couple of years and gone with French Derby horses. was it Henri Matisse last year and
Camille Pissarro
as well, a couple of years ago as well. So look, yeah, it has been done recently, but that would be very much sort of defying a trend. To be honest, if I think Aidan O'Brien's going to win it, I wouldn't be surprised if Hawk Mountain does the job. But like Darazan is a fascinating runner.
Second favourite, Darazan.
Second run. Half brother to Darius, the
arc winner
and arc favourite to do
only
it
the
again.
One run, a 5-length win over Mata Saint-Cloud earlier this month.
Absolutely amazing to think he's coming in there. And then you've like Domelan as well, who's unbeaten, is 3 from 3. So as regards from a pure punting point of view, I'd absolutely be taking on Constitution River at 7-4
with the draw
15-8. You know,
then again, the genius is in the saddle, Ryan Moore.
I know, he's a pretty big genius in the saddle of Hawk Mountain as well.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't think Christophe Soumillon would be too upset to be saying, "Oh, you're not riding, you know, you're not riding Constitution River, you're riding Hawk Mountain." He's a Group One winner as a 2-year-old. He's won his prep run as well.
He's drawn 11.
Yeah, I mean,
I like him. He's a 9-furlong winner for Aidan O'Brien and Christophe Soumillon at the course, first time out this year, following his win in the Group One Futurity Stakes at Doncaster as a 2-year-old. Definitely think he's got an each way chance. I always like read the comments in the Racing Post or other publications to see how much Aidan O'Brien says about horses.
Yeah.
Like, for example, Montreal, there's nothing said about him.
But
if you read Hawk Mountain's quotes, it's like an essay.
He reams. He's a big fan of that horse.
That says a lot. You've got to read between the lines, folks, if you're doing form study. If a trainer is gushing about a horse effusively, even if they haven't maybe shown a bit of form recently, I always think it's something to put in the notebook.
Yeah. It's always something as well that strikes me, and I'm always kind of looking, you know yourself as well, seeing the run up to Cheltenham, I would do that as well, where you look through all those, and so much of it is nonsense, but you might just find, when you comb through it, you might just find the way they talk about a horse in a different way. It's always...
Or even a target they put on a horse?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, the fact that Hawk Mountain did have an entry in the Irish Guineas as well, suggests he'll definitely have the pace to be heavily involved here over 10 furlongs. Look, I'm a big Hawk Mountain fan. Wouldn't be surprised if that, like, what a run it would be if Darazan was to win this at just his second start. That'd be brilliant. But like you said, he has it on the page. His half brother's an arc winner and favourite to be a dual arc winner.
Comorebi is Andre Fab for Godolphin. I haven't really seen that link that much before.
Yeah, they used to have those, remember those straw kind of gold colours are very cool. They have them a little bit.
His horse is second in the French Guineas.
Yeah.
And Hankalo was third in the French Guineas. I must have proved his stamina, but he's got the plum draw. He's in stall one.
Yeah, I would think, I would not be surprised if it goes to the Aidan O'Brien second string, notable second string at Hawk Mountain. I think at the prices.
Yeah.
He's just a horse. I know he has a double figure draw as well, but there's plenty inside him, and you know it's just a big sweeping track. That's in the Shanty. You know, you can just get kicked around the bend a bit, and that's obviously why that double figure draw is such a negative. But yeah, I'd love to see Darazan do it. But from a betting point of view, I'd be with Hawk Mountain. And from a betting point of view, you know, Constitution River 7-4. I think that's a lay all day.
Right, be careful if you lay those as well, folks.
Pearl
Majesty, bit of money for it into 20s, second in terms of the draw. That's a good draw. No issue with the ground and the trip. Group 3 winner over the distance at Longchamp last time. Obviously, needs a step forward on that. Oxagon, well drawn, but is he good enough? Canadian is outclassed. Gostam, an unbeaten German horse, a distance winner in a Group 2 last time. Ground, no issue. Very hard to assess his ability, though. Could be anything. You spoke about Dalmalan. Comorebi, we've discussed. Montreal, we've discussed. Campesite has got form to find with a few of these. Darazan, you've touched upon. Seagal and a boy named Susie might have class questions to answer, as would Gusto. And Alam has got the worst draw, a Group 3 winner over the distance of Saint-Cloud earlier this month. That is the French Derby of Chanty.
Yeah, a real stallion maker race as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Like
that is just such, it's in such vogue now to have a 3-year-old 10 furlong winner.
Yes. Seems to be the sexier thing now than even the Epsom Derby. It feels like the Eclipse is a big race now.
Yeah, well, so many of those.
Like this whole thing about the Triple Crown is just, it's no longer really even a concept where you go to the Guineas.
No, because the thing is, so many Derby winners now end up as National Hunt Stallions. You know, that's the reality of it. And they're not as profitable as your Derby winners, even though like the likes of Australian Camelot are still well able to go and find find really good horses, but it's just not very fashionable. Like you look at Harzand, like Harzand's a Jewel Derby winner and he's a jump sire now. He's absolutely a jump sire, you know?
Yeah. That's the Shanty Prix de Jockey Club on Sunday with obviously a lot of Irish interest in that with Nathan O'Brien. We also have as well Carlisle.
Is this the first time we've had Carlisle on the show? I think it probably is.
Maybe the last as well.
Carlisle. No, Carlisle Bell, actually, one of the famous races at Carlisle. The trophy at, I think, is one of the oldest trophies in English sport.
Yes.
Or oldest original trophies of the Carlisle Bell.
So. I have a cousin living up in Carlisle, Cumbria, around that area. But the thing about it is like it's north enough now in England.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Dad used to always like say, look for the longest traveller because they're not going up in the horse box for nothing. So is it a Strange or a Strange in the Leicester Piggott Filly Stakes, the Group 3, 1 mile, 3 furlongs, 8 runners? Looks like a completely head and shoulders above the others. Would you see it as that? Being the case,
the
3:10 Carlisle on Saturday.
I didn't think Warda was completely out of this.
Yeah.
But again, they're two kind of sort of like obviously a Strange is, is 8 pounds better officially and is more of a kind of a 10 furlong type. Whereas I thought Warda is probably sort of mile and a half, mile and six type in time and has some very strong form at that kind of level, but. Carlisle is a stiff track and it's a place where favourites get turned over. It's a place I think where Carl Burke likes to send his 2-year-olds just to really give them a good hard race to kind of sort them out. Similar to like Nace or Navin or someone like that. Good, strong uphill finish. So, a Strange is a very, very wordy favourite. But, if Warda upset the apple cart here, I wouldn't be too surprised. And, Owen Burrows is a pretty long journey as well.
Yeah. So Strange second in 2 Group 1s at York and Ascot last year, the first run of this year, but she did win first time out last season. She sets the standard. But in an 8-runner race, sometimes you might want to go for something each way to get in the first three. The one I did pick out is Kodana. Did well in handicaps last season, ran well at Goodwood on reappearance. I think he's an improver and a bit of money for it as well now. The one horse attracting money into about 12-1, Kodana for Ross O'Ryan.
Yeah, I just thought Wardour was the one to take on
Group
the favourite.
Winner
with. Yeah.
Goodwood last year.
And ran behind Calpana at the back end of last season as well. I know it finished eighth, but that's all right. And Owen Burrow is well able to have them ready first time out as well. So I wouldn't worry about that. And as you mentioned, that, strong traveller angle coming down from Owen Burrow's, it's a fair old trip for him as well.
What do you think is the toughest track in Ireland in terms of testing a horse?
I say Leopardstown must be one of the most. You see so many times when you think a horse is going to win a Leopardstown and then they get reeled in up the straight, don't they? Good horses just get reeled in. It's a difficult place to win just because, number one, it's got a higher class of racing, and two, just that uphill finish. You see so many horses hit short prices by the furlong pole, and then, it can be a different story on the line. But very fair track, but... it's a stiff track. Look, Nace and Navin to be similar as well.
Yeah.
There's big, stiff uphill finishes. Navin in the thick of winter, it's a long way from home. Sometimes when I see an air start race and Navin in winter, you think, are these even moving? And then, by the time they get home, it's like there's a point-to-point track, one of the most famous point-to-point tracks, Drumahan, similar thing.
Where's that?
It's down in Cork. And you see them coming up that hill in winter, takes some getting. You see it, those 4-year-olds winning Drumahan maidens, it's a positive because it's just such a stiff track. It's just left-handed tight turn, and then they just pull. Must be 3 furlongs uphill, 2.5 furlongs uphill in the closing stages. It's tough going.
Sometimes you don't see it on television. I was at Nace there before Cheltenham, and went down to the last hurdle, and wow, this is stiff.
Yeah, no,
never think about it.
And it's a steady pull the whole way. It's the whole way from the bottom of the bend. You'll see inexperienced jockeys often and they'll try to make a move in the bend and you're like, you're goosed. You're trying to rally for position at the bend at the bottom of the hill, and it's too late.
Davy Russell was with me doing an interview last year about 18 months ago, and he said, yeah, you only have one go. You have one go to say, we're going to push now.
Yeah.
And you have to conserve the petrol to say one shot, but if you go too soon,
Yeah, it's gone. It's gone. Yeah. I heard that piece actually. Yeah, you said it was something like, you know, your turbo, your one bit of fuel left in the tank.
Yeah. So we also have in Carlisle on Saturday the Silver Bowl handicap. Once again, I think the prize money is putting us to shame here in some of these races in the UK. Like Carlisle is not Ascot, but some of the prize money is very good over there now.
Yeah, and to be fair, you know, those Saturday prize monies, like obviously, I think this was moved from Haydock, wasn't it?
With
the weird situation they had with the collapse and drain in the track, which is just terrible to see. But yeah, this is great for Carlisle to have a 100 grand race on. And, you know, you won't see the colour of a race like this in Ireland over the course of the weekend.
Yeah.
What, we have three jumps meetings and a very low-grade flat affair on Sunday. So, absolutely. Paul Princing, look, is obviously the one who's very much on the up, very much unexposed. And
William Haggis, key master of these races.
Yeah, there's two schools of thinking of William Haggis sending horses running to the north. In that one, they're just... you know, they're absolute good things, or two, they're not good enough to run the south. So there's just whether which of those it is. But Princing, I think, is very much just one on the up. The horse that beat him in Newmarket, and when you watch the race back, the horse that beat him in Newmarket ran the Heron Stakes during the week and actually has an entry in Royal Ascot. But in that race in Newmarket that day, you were drawn far side of the track, and basically Rab Havlin got first run on him. And like, they were kind of in two groups. Princing essentially won his group and then had your man over the far side of the track and had to go and chase him, and was chasing him down, in fairness. But like, the winning group was in front of the second group when the winner made his move, and it was impossible. I think it was Halloween on heavy going in Newmarket. Really, really good run. Obviously then won first time out this season. So from that point of view, you'd have to think that 87 looks very much within Princing's compass.
Yeah, 3-1 and market support for it as well. He's the one I picked out as well, won over the distance at Weatherby last month. I think more to come for him. The other ones, Crest of Fire is interesting because he ran well in five races at 2-year-olds without winning, but Hank Lowe, who beat him in one of those races, is running the French Derby. So
Yeah, he's some really strong 2-year-old form. You know, and he's, because of the way he's campaigned, maybe there is a bit of, you know, he's a bit of scope to do okay off that mark. The one I thought was fairly unexposed as well, is sponsored a huge price. Kind of the first time out, he probably was just having a look. Then he went up and trip and down and trip. His second run maybe didn't quite look like he saw at a mile. And then maybe this stiff 7 furlongs could be to suit him. Again, huge price.
33-1.
Yeah, small, you know, small each way type selection in sponsor. But if there is a kind of group horse and a handicap here, for me, it would appear to be Princeling.
Yeah, and Laria Crown as well. Bit of a drift, to be honest, out to 10s, but is going the right way. He's won a couple of handicaps, won a 1 miler at Sandown last month, but this is competitive, 16 runners for this one on Saturday. Listowel on Saturday as well, 5 o'clock, the 1-1-0, the 110 series final handicap hurdle, 2 miles, 7.5 furlongs, 3 miles, effectively 11 runners. I would doubt that there's any odds on this yet, but I'll have a look.
No, nothing
as
yet.
This is an SP day.
Yeah, absolutely. And
the Stoll, again, is a track that needs knowing. It's a bit of a quirky track.
Yeah, it's very tight as well, isn't
it? Very tight, yeah.
And, you know, it's one of those places that it's a bit like, oh, it's all about 1 week of the year.
Yeah.
And sort of the rest of the stuff that goes on down there is relatively low grade. But it's a great place, and it's a great place to go. And if you're heading for a few days and, you know, there's a bit of racing on, like Listowel is a hell of a place to go. You know, head to Ballybunion, over to Listowel. I mean, there's quite a few people that go and they wouldn't see a horse for the weekend, the Harvest Festival. But it's always been a great place to go. There's one I thought maybe had a little squeak there. It was way down south. He was third at Cork, similar kind of race last time out there for...
second on his penultimate run under the claimer that's riding him on Saturday. Yeah, so that's interesting.
Yeah, and look, they're obviously, you know, just similar kind of tracks as well. You know, I just thought way down south might be a bit of an each way squeak there.
Gavin Cromwell had a big price winner at the Curragh last week, and he's got Embrace the Day at Listowel, and this horse won his point and has made no impression yet over hurdles, but he's been running over, I suppose, shorter trips. This is the longest distance he's encountered. He could be on a decent mark as a young horse, a 5-year-old. Embrace the Day. Keep an eye on him. And Somersby Roost is looking to go in again after winning a handicap hurdle at Cork last time over 2 miles, 3 furlongs, top of the ground. She also won her points, so she would be a contender as well. Anything else that you're spotting in the weekend, Tom?
No, I'm just really looking forward to, very much looking forward to that French Derby. I think it'd be the absolute highlight. Just to mention, all the two-year-olds that won over the course of the weekend, last weekend, looked group class. Obviously, Great Barrier Reef did something a little bit different. And I know I was very, very sweet in him last week, but actually seeing him in the flesh this time around, he's actually matured quite a lot. And apparently he had missed a little bit of work and done a bad piece of work before winning the Marble Hill last week. So it was actually, I actually asked Aidan, was it intentional the way he was ridden? And he said, no, we just kind of missed the break a little bit. But then Ryan was happy to just, you know, set him a target and go on and see if he could pick up a stablemate. And he did, and he probably won going away in the end. So I'm not sure if he's been tightened up too much on the back of that, because it did seem a little workmanlike, but it was a nice performance, and I certainly wouldn't be thinking of putting anyone off on the
Coventry Stakes at Ascot is where he's going. And the other two-year-olds as well.
Sun Goddess was really impressive. I think she's heading for the Albany. Just a really, really nice performance by her. And one thing as well, the markets at the Curragh were very, very solid. Like, Sun Goddess was back, like, defeat was out of the question. Great Barrier Reef was back, like, defeat was out of the question. Mini Hawk was not super back. She stayed odds on, but Gestad was very, very strong. And the other absolute punt of the weekend was Tony Martin in the last on Sunday. I heard a report that somebody laid 100 each way at 33s. And he was returned at 15-2.
17-2.
Yeah, 17-2.
Shamie Heffernan and
John Breslin, Tony Martin. And they had a good punt. But on the show, like, you don't see that very often anymore.
Open 25-1.
Yeah, no, on the show. It was that 100 each way at 33s was on the show. Like, walked into the betting ring, had 100 cash, 33s, and it was backed on the, like, 33s down to 8s in the ring. In that 20 minutes. That's why it was so different. Do you know what I mean? You see punts and they go on for days, or they go on for the whole day. But this was military stuff now. I thought it was very, very impressive.
Yeah, well, if it comes off, and sometimes it doesn't, but it's obviously easier in the flat.
No better man, to be fair. Yeah. But it was a big field, like mile six, a lot of...
24 runners.
A lot of jumps horses in there.
Class.
And
When a plan comes together like that, and that's class.
And it was quite clear that everybody within the owner's circle had backed it as well. It was great.
The ring, somebody told me when I was at Cheltenham, has kind of come alive again a bit now. You can get a bit on, you have a lot of affordability checks on online accounts and online bookmakers, and sometimes it's hard even to get on if you fancy something, that the ring is now where you can go and have a bit on.
Yeah, I'm hearing that there's quite a lot of people coming out from the UK and betting in cash in Ireland on the weekends.
Yeah.
At race courses. So it's definitely a thing that's happening, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, look, I love that story, like Tony Martin. I'm a big Tony Martin fan anyway. Love to see people execute plans successfully like that, and that was particularly good. Again, just to see, because it was on the show, and it was a lot of cash, and it was well done.
And sometimes it doesn't come off, as we know. We have Alex Dunn on the line from William Hill. How are you, Alex?
Yeah, very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. Is the French Derby something that you're looking at, or is it even a really betting thing for William Hill, or are you more into the meetings in the UK on Saturday, for example?
Oh, without question, we'll take more on the Saturday races in the UK, but that's not to say that there hasn't been a fair bit of interest in the Sunday race over in France because of the open nature of it, but also the implications that race then has on the English Derby next weekend, and the fact that Aidan has decided to send Constitution River there. It's been a fair bit of conjecture, hasn't it, over the last fortnight or so, but he has finally decided what he's going to do. Well, we think anyway, the horse hasn't actually run yet.
Yeah. What's your view on the race?
Well, Constitution River is popular and has been pretty popular throughout the course of the last few days, really. Again, from an anti-post point of view, there was quite a bit of money around, so it was popular at a lot of different prices, 5-2, then into 9-4. Decks come through, now around about the 2-1 mark, but the view for the trading room on the race is that just the vibes on this horse are really, really strong. It was a case of wherever Constitution River goes, he probably wins. Now, whether that is going to be the case, we're not sure. And drawn out in 15 gives us a bit of hope that maybe we could try and take him on. Let's face it, we're dealing with some unexposed three-year-olds, some of whom we don't know that much about because they're trained in France. But I think this might end up being a better race than maybe the market would suggest is the case right now. A worthy favourite, of course. But I think we'll try and get Constitution River beat. And let's face it, drawn out in 15 is kind of where you would hope, if you were trying to take the favourite on, that the favourite will be drawn.
What about then Carlisle? Is that the meeting attracting the most interest in the UK on Saturday for you?
Yeah, certainly is. It's a really, really good card. It's not the best Saturday of racing that you'll ever see.
Yes.
But Carlisle have managed to take what they already had and add Haydock's races from last week that didn't go ahead. And they've ended up with a really, really good card for the track and some competitive stuff. The 3:10, the Leicester Piggott filly stakes, sees the return of Estrange, and she's going to be pretty popular tomorrow. Currently priced up at 11-10, 5-1 for Wardar. Azania is 11-2, and it's 8-1 and bigger the rest. But Estrange last season really did create quite the impression. I mean, you can't miss her. She's absolutely gorgeous to look at, but she's got a lot of ability as well. That said, at that sort of price, again, view from the trading room, that she will be popular, but we're going to try and take her on at around 11-10 because the grounds are a bit of a negative for her. And there's every chance she's not going to be fully tuned up off the time of that time off the track. So the fact that you've got some decent fillies lining up against her is reason to believe that we can try and take her on at 11-10, but she's going to be popular.
And then with the Silver Cup, then Princeline, we both like here for William Haggis. 3-1 looks solid enough.
Yeah, I'll make it a hat trick if you like, because I think Princeline will win as well. Really, really talented performer. But it is, again, that kind of race where you do have the unexposed types, and there are a few that could feasibly improve quite a bit. The ones for money, and this sounds blindingly obvious, but the first three in the betting, as things stand, are the ones that have attracted money since declarations came through. So Princeling, who's rock solid at 3s. 7-2 for Langston, who could be the fly in the ointment. Already backed in from 6-1 to 7-2 for Clive Cox. And then Crest of Fire, who's in there at 5-1. Has also been nibbled at. What I will say is one at a big price, or bigger price than I was expecting, is Laureate Crown, who
yes.
I thought would go really close at Haydock last week when the race was due to be run there. It's 10-1, and in a strange way, that almost puts me off, because I'd have expected Laureate Crown to be pitched in among those vying for favouritism for the race. So a much bigger price than I was expecting, and I must say, when this horse won last time out, I thought, well, he's worthy of respect wherever he goes next. So I do respect Laureate Crown, and I'm surprised at 10-1, but you can be fooled by markets sometimes, can't you?
You can, and look, it's a tricky one. Sometimes, as Tom was saying, the market is on it, and if a horse is drifting notably, you go, oh. But sometimes you just need to back your own opinion as well. I mean, King Rascal Grey at Cheltenham, out to 11-1. I remember Mashburn winning the Triumph a few years ago, like drifted like a barge into 6s and won.
Yeah, there's the Triumph in particular feels like a race where the drifting favourites as well. Joseph's.
There's a lot of Saratoga. It was 10-1 at Cheltenham this year. It was like 4-1, I think, Antipost. So sometimes you gotta
trust him.
You gotta trust your own opinion.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I, Alex, I think you know your trading room could have a few things on side this weekend as well. I don't know if you heard, but I'm pretty much in the camp that Constitution River is there to be beaten from that draw, even if he had such an impressive trial. And, 11-10, that horse in the earlier Carlisle as well, Estrange. First time out, you have to be taking those horses on, don't you?
Well, I mean, I think as well, she is so memorable because of how she looks. And,
yes.
and if you've watched her once, you think, wow, I can't wait to see her win again or whatever.
Yeah.
But then that doesn't make her a bet necessarily at that price in what does look a decent race. Look, she could win by half the track, and I wouldn't be shocked if she did. But it's a better race than maybe 11-10 and then 5's the field suggests, I would suggest. The long and short of it is that a lot of eyes on Carlisle this Saturday, which you won't say very often.
Don't say but it's, very often.
No, you don't.
No, it's nice to see for a track in the north who've managed to swoop in and save the day.
Have you noticed anything else attracting money this weekend, Alex?
The big mover for me was Langston, actually, coming into this. Purely, I asked the traders earlier, you know, has there been a fair spread of money so far? And they said, well, Princeling Crest of Fire, you know, solid, but Langston's the one that has really been well backed. So that was the main one. As for the action on Sunday, I'm just fascinated to see what happens with Constitution River now, whether we see 15 to 8, 2 to 1 remain, or whether we do see a bit of a drift as we get closer to the race, purely because of the draw and the fact that, again, it's a stacked race. I've said it's not the best weekend of racing, but I'm actually really looking forward to it. I think there's plenty of angles into to a lot of interested runners. So it doesn't have to be group ones across the board to find a good bet and to find a bit of interest.
Anytime there's racing, it's a good day. Langston has yet to race over a mile, it was from my notes on him. And looking at next week as well, Alex, like the Oaks. You have Amelia Earhart at 5-2 precise. Don't know if she's going to go there, but she's 2-1. Legacy Link 7-2. Venetian Lace 8s. Thundering On 10s. Cambio 12s. And Kesara 20-1. A La Prochaine 14s. Earthshot 33s. Then looking at the Derby next weekend at Epsom. And Benvenuto Cellini.
You're with him, aren't you?
I think so. I need to go back and look at. He's 2-1. Item is 4s. Pierre Bernard is the horse attracting a lot of money. Alex 7-1. He's the one in the, if you're looking at the odds compounding sites, who's definitely in the positive bracket. Maltese Cross is 10s. James J. Braddock 12s. Spade Brilliant 16s. Ancient Egypt 16s. Anything to note from Epsom, or is it too soon to say, Alex?
No, a couple of movers from the last sort of week or so. We've had all this conjecture around what's going to go for the French Derby, what's going to go for the English one. Well, the horses that have been back for the Oaks and the Derby both sound French, which doesn't really help matters. But A La Prochaine's been back for the Oaks and Pierre Bernard for the Derby. You highlighted there that there's been a fair bit of money for that one. I think once jockey bookings are announced, we always see this huge shake-up in the betting. What I'd say from an Oaks point of view, whether the current 2-1 favourite precise goes there or not, whether Ryan Moore chooses her or not is another thing to ponder. But Wayne Lorden's more than capable of coming in and riding a winner, you know, whoever Aiden jocks up. I thought Amelia Earhart had, with the proven stamina right now, was the way that I'd want to play that around about 5-2 and has been pretty solid. And yeah, as for the Derby, Benvenuto Cellini 3s into 2s earlier this week, but Ryan will ride, I would imagine. I'd be very shocked if he didn't. And is the one to beat. So I've got more of a strong view on the Derby. I think Benvenuto Cellini is going to take a fair bit of beating. But I wouldn't be shocked if we saw a little bit of a minor upset in the Oaks. But again, it all depends on whether the current market leader turns up.
Yeah, I like Cameo in the Oaks, actually. I thought what she did at Lingfield was very visually impressive. Next weekend, hopefully Killandigan turns up in the Coronation Cup. He is scheduled, and I think he's around about even money. But and I like Item in the Derby. I'd love to see it for Colin Keane and Andrew Balding.
Yes.
Thought he did it well in the Dante at York. You know, beat Action in Christmas Day nicely. He looked to be doing his best work late on. Really hit the line strong. I'm excited for him. So yeah, I have two bets alive for next weekend. I backed Killandigan ages ago, so hopefully he runs, and also I backed Item for the Oaks.
Legacy Link won the Muzzadora for Colin Keane and the Goslins. I liked her because she was in front for so long.
Yeah, she had.
And she had to do the hard way, and I think she could come on for that, and she's the one I took out of York, really. And Babe Brilliance, just because Maltese Cross beat him, but he only beat him so narrowly in the Linkfield Derby trials. Sometimes you look at the horse of second. He'd be 16-1 for the Derby, but
James J. Braddock's kind of a little forgotten about, just because you know, Pierre Bonnard was turned over, but like he beat him kind of fair and square to my eye. I know he didn't win by much, but I just feel he might be a little overpriced. Definitely sounds like he's going for the race.
Yeah.
You know, if you're having a bet this far out, at least you know he's going to run. I think that's a big thing for me.
I was asking Tom, Alex, earlier, has he been to Epsom? Have you been to the Epsom Derby?
No, I haven't. And this year, for Epsom Derby Day, I'll be at Hexham. And I don't think you could find too much more different tracks. So,
right.
Yeah, it's one of those things going back years and years and years. Derby Day is always around my dad's birthday. So we'd go to Hexham, glorious sunshine, watch the Derby on the telly. What's not to like? So we've decided this year to try and reenact that from years gone by. But yeah,
that's lovely.
Well, you've got one of those things as well. There's a race at Hexham on next Saturday. It's the first three-year-old juvenile hurdler of the season. And you sort of look at the race and you go, honestly, you've got the Derby, and then a couple of hours later, you've got some other three-year-olds who've taken a very different path and have ended up here, running around Hexham.
Listen, I'm sure many of them shared the same sales ring at one stage, you know.
But no, never been to Hexham. Would like to go, to be honest. But it's just such a... I love this stage of the season with the three-year-olds, because if you've got a strong view coming into the season, whether that's because you think a two-year-old will improve a lot from two to three or whatever it is, no matter what has happened on their first run of the season, you can keep that view, because you can completely either discount the first run or go, look how much this horse has improved. Everyone can have strong opinions coming into this month, really, in June, and then it might all go to tatters after that. But you can forgive a horse one bad run at the start of their three-year-old career, or you can latch onto it and go, this is a clean slate. It all just depends how you look at it, really.
Arthur Stevenson, I think he was heavily associated with Hexham. He was the Gold Cup winning trainer of the Thinker in 1987, and Durham edition a couple of times, second of the Grand National. Tom Malone's charity bet won last week, folks, Causeway, and we're on a roll, obviously, into the second week of it. Tom Malone's charity bet, you got 50 in the nose, Tom, or 25 each way. What are you going to do?
We're going to go on the nose. Yeah, we'll stick with the Silver Bowl, won the races we've already previewed. As always, when you're looking at a handicap, you hope you're looking for a group horse in a handicap, and I think Princeling is just that. So Silver Bowl, Carlisle, 3:45, and Princeling, that's the charity bet for the week.
Tom Malone's charity bet on the racing pod this week is Princeling, the prince among men. 3-1, and it's 50 on the nose. And if you're going to have a look yourself, obviously do so responsibly. Alex Dunn from William Hill, thank you so much.
Lovely, thank you.
And Tom, thank you.
Cheers, John.
That was the racing pod for this week. We'll chat soon. Remember, the pod is free wherever you get your podcasts.
The Racing Pod.
On Off the Ball.
With William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.